You've just come from Gianni Infantino's press conference?
Not quite, have we, Tarek? We've had a bit of a song and a dance in Bangkok around that, but yes, no press conference.
Well, thanks to Gianni Infantino, we can record this pod a little bit earlier.
So we can. All about the FIFA Congress in Bangkok. Hello, welcome again to Sport Unlocked. Joining me, Rob Harris from Sky News, not in Thailand, but those who are, as ever, Martin Ziegler from The Times, Tarek Panja from The New York Times at the 74th FIFA Congress. So how's it been out there?
Sawadee, as they say here. It's been bizarre, I'd say, Martin. What do you think? I mean, a lot of strange doings here.
Yeah, I mean, lots of sort of controversial reforms brought in without any sort of opposition whatsoever, basically, which I think we've talked about before. There have been Brazil awarded the Women's World Cup for 2027, as expected. But yes, otherwise it's been the hunt for Gianni Infantino to try and hold him to account.
Normally
there's a press conference at the end of every FIFA Congress. In the past, after every FIFA Council meeting, FIFA Exco, even Sepp Blatter in those days of 2015 after the raids in the Borough, like I was able to ask him challenging questions, even weeks later when FIFA was in the eye of a global storm, we were able to sort of put questions to him. But there is a retreat, isn't there? A retreat from the reforms post 2015 and a retreat from press conferences. But those who aren't in the media listening, why does it matter the fact Gianni Infantino didn't do a press conference?
It matters because of a number of key decisions being taken place, and it's a venue to hear and question the man who is responsible for these big decisions that shape football and beyond. And you mentioned Blatter. He would also do a press conference after every committee meeting, so once a quarter. So there was that regular dialogue. And Infantino, Rob, don't forget, was on that committee. Graham Dunbar from the AP has pointed out the committee that reformed FIFA. One of the points was more candor. In particular, it is abundantly clear that football fans and FIFA's commercial partners will no longer accept anything short of full transparency in how football is governed at the global, regional and local level. We should expect nothing less from each other. So, Martin, Rob, we should be able to talk to these people, shouldn't we? And they should be able to explain their decisions.
Yeah, one of the most important decisions that FIFA has taken over the last year has been to have the 2034 bidding process running at the same time as 2030, and basically effectively awarding that tournament to Saudi Arabia and 2030 to Spain, Portugal and Morocco with three games in South America. Now, there has not been a single opportunity to ask Gianni Infantino about that. There's lots of issues about, you know, why it should be there if it's meant to be taken claim globally, about playing in the winter again possibly, about the sort of close ties he has to Saudi Arabia, Aramco, the oil giant, getting a sponsorship. But there's no opportunity, and that's probably, well, definitely by design.
But FIFA have said in a statement that they're now respected from what was the Totsk institution, and they said that's been acknowledged, all the changes to better governance, by, as they say, several external organisations, including the United States Department of Justice. Tarek, what happened after you contacted one branch of the US government?
Yeah, well, I noticed that FIFA have been using that refrain for the last few years, whether it's in a speech or a reply in an email. So I thought, you know, why don't we just check with the Department of Justice? So I checked, and a spokesman for the Eastern District of New York, where those FIFA trials were held. Everyone remembers the great scandal of 2015. And I said, look, FIFA are saying this, that they're no longer toxic and it's a clean, transparent organization with great governance backed by you guys. And what did he say? On the record as well, I was surprised, said they've never backed FIFA's reforms. You know, this isn't anything to do with them. So FIFA trying to essentially, you know, using slightly provocative language, it launder its image through references to the Department of Justice just isn't the case.
I mean, you could say FIFA have better compliance from the Blatter era over the finances, how the money is distributed around the world through the various development projects and to grow the game globally. A lot of the questions, obviously, on the power, how decisions are made, and we'll get into later on about the rollback from the reforms, particularly in Asian football, where we've seen the scrapping of term limits, which are a key thing to try to limit that power, and the introduction of lots more committees at FIFA, which is seen as a sort of power of patronage. But then, of course, one of the rebrands of FIFA was the FIFA Executive Committee becoming the FIFA Council. But Martin, not every member was actually in person in Bangkok. Where was one of the FIFA Council members taking part of the meeting in from?
Yes, this was the FIFA Council member from Mali, Mamadou Touré, who actually dialed in or was video linked in from prison, from Bamako, where he's awaiting charges, trial on charges of embezzling public funds. He denies any wrongdoing, but even so, it certainly raised eyebrows amongst some of the council members who were in there.
Did FIFA say anything to you, Martin, as to how he ended up, you know, still being allowed in the meeting? What their view of this guy is, given that he is, as you said, imprisoned?
No, there was no official response from FIFA at all. Speaking to some of those in the room, I think they were told that he was doing the video link from a clinic somewhere, but that's as far as we know.
And what happened, you know, when you did encounter Infantino? Obviously, he is around, he's leaving council meetings. You can go on the floor of the FIFA Congress itself and wander between the sessions. When you attempted to ask him questions, what happened?
Yeah, well, after the council meeting in the FIFA hotel, I went to him and said, can I have a couple of questions around the Saudi World Cup? And he waved one of his public relations advisors and said, ask him. And then the following day, I spoke to him outside when he'd been addressing the UEFA and Asian confederations and said that I could have another quick words, and he said tomorrow. And then we waited for him again after he'd finished at the on stage at the Congress today, and Tarek, he didn't even speak this time, did he?
I don't think he even turned round this time. We were asking for you to have questions. And Rob, you know, we mentioned this at the start. We've obviously travelled here quite a long way for what is a, you know, an important event. They know that we are here to cover this. And, you know, for as long as I can remember, as long as I've covered this, this is what's supposed to happen. Now, how are we supposed to get clear answers? And just one other thing that happened today that I found quite curious. It was, as we say, a very important day for women's football, hugely important day, because you're hosting the Women's World Cup, the biggest tournament in women's football in 2027. Bid between Brazil, we had predicted would win, and Belgium, Holland, and Germany. There were presentations, and then there was the vote. What was curious is, before all of that, halfway through the Congress, there was a break. And afterwards, the FIFA vice president, the president of UEFA, essentially the confederations where the European bid comes from, Alexander Šefčovič, didn't return. Now, you know, unless something untoward has happened to him, hope not, and he's feeling well. It was just very strange to not see a figure of that much importance in European football present for such an important moment for those three countries and for women's football.
Yeah, huge moment with the Women's World Cup going to South America for the first time, and Brazil, a country that's been so instrumental in a lot of the growth. While we're looking at what was decided at the Congress, the big thing building up this for many months was the stand against racism. How would they manage to sort of produce proposals that would address the concerns across the global game? And we did get the announcement, obviously, as we are reflecting, no chance to be able to put any of our questions about how this moves forward to FIFA on the record, given the lack of press conference. But at the heart of these proposals, there was a new gesture to referees, almost a cross of the arms. But they're keeping the three-step anti-racism procedure, which is about warnings within the stadium gradually rising to abandoning the match if the race abuse isn't stopping. But we've heard from Kick It Out, the leading anti-racism organisation in the UK who have said that they're surprised that this protocol is continuing. They say it's failed to protect players for years. And rather than introducing new hand gestures, FIFA should focus on empowering players and their management to leave the pitch when they feel it's appropriate. Referees also need better education. So on this particular part, it's still putting the onus on the players almost to be the ones to report it to the referees. Also, this new players committee that has kicked it out, say it's asking them, the players, to come up with solutions to tackle this issue, which they say is unfair.
Absolutely valid points, but yeah, it's impossible to sort of get any response on to those. So, I mean, let's see if this gesture has any positive impact. I mean, it might do, I guess, if players make the gesture and referees actually suddenly realise they're going to have to take it seriously if they haven't before. I mean, there's some high profile backers for this: Ian Wright, Emmanuel Adebayor. So. Let's not write it off completely, perhaps.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, having these players on board is obviously important. But, players against racism is quite an easy door to push. The proof of the pudding will be whether action is taken and how serious it is. In terms of reaction, the European Football Supporters Group head, this Ronan Evain, who we've had on the pod, he said he called it the same protocol in place for the last 7 or 8 years and hardly ever used. Surely, not a groundbreaking development. But then the question is, what can they do, FIFA? Some people have talked about points deductions to teams. Is that the way forward? And has that been trialled? Maybe something like that.
Obviously, sometimes it's raised the risk of sort of sabotage by fans getting a game abandoned, isn't it? And that's perhaps one of the reasons for an immediate abandonment of a match when there is racist abuse. While remembering that this is about players in their workplace facing abuse, which is horrific. Someone did point it out to me, is this right, the fact that in case of, say, dissent towards a referee, it's two strikes and you're out, so it's a two-step process that you'd go if it sort of happened just twice?
Don't know. I guess we'll see. Let's see how this plays out.
Yeah, there's one user just on Twitter who was sort of mentioning that. The other part of these announcements from FIFA was, we together, united as global football, will push for recognition of racism as a criminal offence in every country in the world, and where it is already an offence, we'll push for prosecution with the severity it deserves. Now, that seems quite a big mission to take on by FIFA, doesn't it? I mean, first of all, no indication how many countries actually do criminalise racism. Some countries which have more of a sort of sense of, you can say what you want, don't you? And any sense on how they're going to mount this campaign when there are so many countries around the world?
No, we didn't get any detail on that. Perhaps that was something we could have followed up on had there been a press conference, for example. But away from that, it is hard for FIFA to change legislation. But the idea that FIFA will go around the world asking people to criminalize racism, sure, good. Racism is bad. Let's take some. I don't think really we're going to see jurisdictional action based on FIFA asking for it. Even though we don't need to say racism is a bad thing, do we? It's pretty obvious.
And social media is where a lot of the race abuse happens now, doesn't it? The players are facing horrific abuse there, and this plan doesn't seem to directly address social media, does it?
No, it didn't mention social media companies, and that was one of the things. When there was the analysis after Euro 2020, when England lost on penalties to Italy, three black players missed their penalties in that game: Sancho, Saka, and Rashford. When the analysis was done, there was a huge degree of racism towards those players coming from, for example, Southeast Asia and the Middle East. Now, who's responsible for that? How many jurisdictions are required to coordinate? And how much responsibilities do the social media companies have?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the UK, the government has brought in legislation which does that, or is going to hold the social media companies more accountable. Because, as you say, if this is an international issue of racism being directed at players in one country, then who is going to be responsible for that?
And FIFA themselves have put out reports looking at the abuse that players have faced, both after the Men's World Cup 22, the Women's World Cup 2023, working in part with FIFPro as well. And they found that the abuse and protections had various sort of issues around it. And while they have identified the problem, how much have they been focused on solutions? Because I mentioned it the other week, Gianni Infantino was at the Milken Institute speaking in California a couple of weeks ago. And who else did I notice was also speaking there? Elon Musk, of course, the owner of X, one of the platforms that is full of a lot of abuse. I mean, I often spot it and will report it just to see how they do respond sometimes. And very often that you see they've found no racism. So I asked FIFA, did Gianni Infantino use the opportunity while being at the Milken to speak to Elon Musk? Because that's one of the areas where players want addressing. And no, they had no indication at all. Whereas you think that would be the one person he would seek out that entire conference. Can you sort it out so X, Twitter, is a safer place for footballers?
That's quite a good point in terms of this. You know, if we're seeing the president of FIFA hobnobbing at these very elite levels, he's the guy, I guess, who has access and opportunity to speak with these people. It'd be interesting to see if he's ever taken that chance up, because it seems to only be going one way, doesn't it?
So we'll see just how it progresses, the FIFA mission around the world to try to get anti-racism laws enacted. Something pretty notable from FIFA that transforms things, opening the door to domestic leagues playing games overseas. Remember when we were with FIFA in, I think it was Rwanda in 2018, and La Liga were playing games in the US at the time. It was very forceful from FIFA. No, this shouldn't happen. The question is, has their hand been forced by a decision in the US?
Well, it does look like they had this sort of legal action from Relevant Sports, which they've sort of agreed to settle in some sort of way. We don't know how. I don't think it'll be direct. But so FIFA and I are going to have a working party to set up to look into, basically, yeah, allowing domestic competitions to play abroad.
Can I make a guess as to what will happen? We can see in the future if this is true. I've got a feeling that there'll be a rule that says these teams could play abroad, maybe to a maximum of one or two per league per year. And that will be some sort of middle ground agreement, because I think legally they're on thin ice. But this is going to be interesting to see.
Sorry? It's anti-competitive. Why should they say it's okay, but you can only do it once or twice? Surely if you can do it, you can have it as many times as you want. Although, could that mean an entire country moving its league to another country? I mean, we see it in cricket for security reasons at times, don't we?
We do. We see the Indian Premier League. We've seen played in the Gulf. The South African Premier League as well has moved because of COVID. But the legal issues are really, really important. As you said, can they tell anyone what to do, anything? We've seen it now with the Super League case. We've seen it with the agents' cases. We've seen it with the transfer rules. And now with the international match calendar as well, Rob. We had the European leagues and FIFPro threatening FIFA over the calendar. Again, that could end up in the court. So you make a really good point.
FIFA did set parameters for this working group deciding the rules to consider, which was about fairness, including the advocacy of advance notice to fans who may miss the opportunity to go to match in the home territory, whether adequate provision has been made for fans of teams playing proposed out-of-territory match to attend it in the host country, the impact on sporting competition in terms of, you know, does it distort the usual home and away schedule if there are games played overseas, and also whether it'd be a single or one-off match or part of a sequence of games. Was pointed out one thing missing from all those considerations, while FIFA amongst those who claim to be part of green initiatives and helping the planet, nothing was mentioned about the impact on the climate with teams suddenly flying for additional matches around the world.
Yeah, good point. I mean, at least this working group will have a representative of supporters, which I think is important. But we've seen La Liga have said they want to play in the United States, which led to this sort of legal action. I don't think the Premier League has the sort of stomach to try and do that. But it'd be interesting if this middle ground you talked about, Tarek, is in the Middle East.
Yeah, possible. Rob?
Yeah, imagine more events being taken there. Well, something else we would have wanted the opportunity to ask about. A common theme of this pod.
Yep, Yeah, maybe another chance.
Now, one of the big issues going into this Congress was the Palestine FA's bid to get Israel banned from world football. We are 2 and a bit years on from Russia being banned by FIFA. That was a decision taken not at a Congress with all 211 nations, but by the smaller FIFA bureau. But the issue of whether to ban Israel has come from the Palestinian FA, along with the Jordanian FA as well, being behind this, Prince Ali, former FIFA presidential candidate himself. And for the Palestine FA, it's about the death toll resulting from Israel's war against Hamas, which for them started after the October the 7th attacks by Hamas on Israel as part of the retaliation that's been going on for several months now. Now, how did this unfold in the Congress room? It didn't ultimately end up with a vote in any way, did it? It's been sort of delayed.
It started the day before the Congress, really, in terms of the movement here. Martin and I, we were at the AFC, Asian Football Confederation Congress, and they basically allowed the Palestinian FA to produce this video, lasted several minutes, and what they were looking to do was to show the effect of this war on sport and football. And it ended, I guess, as you can imagine, quite emotively. It was emotive throughout, I suppose, but with this like list of people who had died, been killed in the conflict. And it lasted well over a minute. And it finished with Sheikh Salman, the AFC president, saying, "We are united in backing the Palestine FA." And then here we are at Congress, Martin, today.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any expectation it was ever going to go to a vote, because I think it would have been something that would have caused a lot of problems. But it was, you know, there's passionate speeches from the president of the Palestine FA, from woman from the Jordanian FA, and in response from the head of the Israeli FA, who's, I think he said something like, you know, we don't want to sort of compare suffering, is how he put it. Hitting back quite strongly. But there was certainly a very sort of loud applause after the Palestinian FA guy had spoken.
Mr. Rajoub, Jibril Rajoub's speech.
Yeah.
There was a lot of kind of applause for that. But Rob, you mentioned Russia, and they've had that suspension. Presumably there are ways this differs from what's happened in that case.
UEFA's General Secretary Theodoridis pointed that out when he was asked at the UEFA Congress a few months ago about the comparisons. He said this is a different war in terms of how it started. Russia's unprovoked attack on Ukraine, this is Israel sees it in self-defense, but with questions now over the death toll, even from allies around the world as well, of Israel. And what the Israeli FA president Moshe Zuarez was saying was that it's become hell since October the 7th after their attack by terrorists. He accused the Palestinians of a cynical, political and hostile ploy to ban Israel, which has nothing to do with football. But that video from the Palestine FA showed the damage caused to footballing facilities, the deaths of players and coaches in Gaza since October the 7th. Now, obviously, FIFA have tried to ensure it is a legal panel of experts that will try to determine and advise the council on this. So taking it very much out of the public forum. The deadline of set seems to be timed to me before the Olympics, where we've got Israel who've qualified for men's football.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had to do something a bit different rather than just say, we'll do it at the next scheduled council meeting in October. I don't think that would have gone down very well. So I think that having this emergency meeting is one thing. And actually talking to people sort of who are sort of in the sort of basically have a sort of quite detailed knowledge about this whole, how this might unfold, what they think will happen is that FIFA will actually take action to force the Israeli FA to stop the what is described as sort of settler clubs, i.e. Clubs that are sort of based in the occupied West Bank, taking part in official Israeli leagues, for example. And I think if they are seen to be doing something, that might take the pressure off that coming from, you know, not just the Palestine FA, but lots of members of the Asian Football Confederation to go even further and ban the Israeli FA. So that, to me, I think that looks like a sort of fairly likely outcome.
The Israel national team does have Arab players in it as well.
Yeah, I suppose they're Israeli Arabs. The other thing with Russia, Rob, the difference here, don't forget that Russia and Ukraine are both in the same confederation. They play in UEFA. Their teams could meet each other. And if you look at how they ended up being banned, this was kind of taken away from being a political issue or a moral issue, but more a practical one, because UEFA had a bunch of nations, not only Ukraine, but several nations across Europe, saying they would not allow their teams to play against Russian teams, whether it's club level or national team. So it risked their ability to carry out their competitions. So that was a technical issue, and that's the way Russia were banned. That technical situation doesn't exist. So whatever decision is taken here, it's hard to see it not being a political decision.
Yeah, and how it interlinks into the politics as well. Gianni Infantino spending a lot of time in the United States at the moment. How would it go down with his ally Donald Trump, for instance, if he was the FIFA president overseeing a ban on Israel?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, to be honest, one of the questions, you know, this is election year in the United States, of course, and he has been close to Trump and the Trump family for so long. Much cooler with the Biden administrations we've seen. We could have asked, we had a chance to ask, you know, did he have a favoured candidate, perhaps, for this election in America?
Of course, he was at the White House when the Abraham Accords were signed during his presidency, which was the sort of normalisation of relations or path to it between Israel and some of the Gulf countries.
Yeah, that was actually pointed out in a letter by the Israeli FA to FIFA before the Congress, when this Palestinian effort to suspend them was first written, and when the Israeli, I think, foreign minister had threatened Jibril Rajoub with arrest if he carried on with this suspension, the Israeli Football Association disavowed themselves from those comments and mentioned to Infantino that, you know, they're trying to get harmony in football, and mentioned the fact that he was at those Abraham Accord signings.
If this had gone to the FIFA Congress for a vote, whichever way, it would have caused huge ruptures. So say Israel had not been banned, the vote had gone against the Palestine FA, then if you're Russia, who of course have not been banned as a member of FIFA while their teams have been banned, well, surely you'd then want a vote of the Congress as well to see if you had the majority of 211 agreeing that they should be excluded from playing matches.
Yeah, that's true. And they did have their representative here, Alexei Sorokin, the Russia 2018 World Cup chief, was here looking very suave in his traditional turtleneck jumper.
Man with a Mona Lisa smile. You never know what he's thinking, do you?
Yeah. Something that the Asian Confederation president, Sheikh Salman, said at their meeting. He said, this was one talking about the Israel-Palestine issue, the AFC is only as strong as its members, and when one suffers, all its other members are affected. Taking it in isolation, it does seem something we might be able to come back to down the line, given the various conflicts within Asia, to see how they act on those cases.
Yeah, absolutely. Imagine we would have said that during the blockade of Qatar, for example, how united Asia would have been then.
Yeah.
Well, on Sheikh Salman, can he stay in power forever now?
He can if he wants. That's the thing. So it's a bizarre, in terms of good governance and optics, maybe people don't care anymore, but the AFC have got rid of any term limits. It used to be the standard maximum three terms of 4 years, so 12 years. But Salman, who is the longest serving Confederation president already, appointed in, I think, 2013, can stay on. However, FIFA still has term limits, so he can't be a FIFA vice president, however long he's the Asian president, after 2031. Still a long way away, I must say.
Interesting you mention that. Maybe that's used as the caveat to remove the FIFA term limit, saying, well, of course he must stay on as FIFA as a vice president if he's the Asian Confederation president.
Good point, Rob. And no surprises, perhaps, that the two federations who proposed the scrapping of term limits were Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Interesting. Qatar's got another FIFA tournament this week again. They've extended the FIFA Arab Cup. It's going to be held for multiple editions more in Qatar. Qatar have also got a youth tournament, haven't they, for several years from FIFA?
Yeah, they've got one of the youth tournaments. I think we mentioned it on the pod a while back. 5 editions in a row. But Rob, those stadiums are built there, aren't they? And they're going to be used and all roads still lead to Doha and Qatar.
Interestingly, yeah. Featured an episode of The Simpsons recently. They mentioned, as they called it, the suffering of those building a stadium in Qatar.
Really? That's amazing.
Human misery?
Misery is how all the best stuff is made. Pyramids, railroads, the Blues, those great soccer stadiums in Qatar. All the things America loves.
And still many waiting for the FIFA report that they promised after the Qatar World Cup. You know, that's been asked about by Amnesty, by others, particularly around this Congress. And it's meant to be the report that highlights if there was any suffering around the World Cup directly and any sort of recompense was needed in any action.
That's right, yes. This was the report that they promised to compile a year ago. Michael Lamas of Gibraltar, I believe, was to lead that. The report, I understand, has been written and has been submitted to FIFA, and they insist it will be made public. But, you know, we're still waiting. But the question I'll have is, will the report be published in the way it was received? They had an external company, a consultancy, human rights consultancy, put it together. It'll be interesting to see if what they produce is what they got. But again, another question, and we have no idea when that will be out.
Of course, all paths at the moment currently leading towards Saudi Arabia in the 2034 World Cup. That was something agreed this week, wasn't it? The fact they will have the dual awarding of World Cups for the men's.
Yeah, so there's going to be, it's going to be awarded on, I think, December the 11th at a virtual congress, which I think probably means no press conference with Gianni Infantino.
Well, you could try and raise your virtual hand, Martin, but I suspect it might be ignored.
Martin Ziegler, you have been muted. A decision from the AFC this week, they actually have rebranded their competitions, and you know, something just struck me about it. It's the club competitions. The Champions League is now the AFC Champions League Elite. There's an AFC Champions League 2, an AFC Challenge League. Something you'll notice there, no gender specified, but the Women's Champions League has been introduced. It's called the AFC Women's Champions League, which is something that we still see across the game. Not in Australia. Australia calls it the Men's A-League and the Women's A-League, so that sort of dominance of the men accentuated in that. But FIFA this week finally announced their Club World Cup for the women's game. It's been promised for over 5 years, but finally a plan for it for January, February 2027. That's the debut, isn't it, if it's planned?
Yeah, and we don't know any more details than that, really. As you say, it's been a sort of raises it. It's something that's coming, but I think it's been quite difficult getting the men's Club World Cup, the new version, up and running. They still haven't got it up and running. I don't think they've even announced next year's host cities. They haven't got a broadcaster, sponsors. So it's probably not surprising that the women's has only just got to this stage.
And the women's one will present some of the same issues you talked about the men's game, which is why you want to increase revenue into the clubs from prize money, that it could then distort domestic local competitions around the world, particularly from those smaller confederations, if they're suddenly given a huge windfall, which is beneficial for them and their players, but would put them at a huge advantage then, which might damage competitiveness domestically.
Yeah, these are the questions. And to be honest, these are really important questions. They're quite big for the future of women's football. And I don't know where the forum is or where the forum for having these conversations. You don't hear much of it. So you sort of arrive, you hear this competition's going to be launched. But what does it mean for the kind of complete global landscape of women's football? What does it mean for the players? What does it mean to grow interest, all of these things? Because we keep forgetting it's like, you know, a sudden growth moment, a really important growth moment for women's football. But the decisions taken today and in the next few years will affect how this game will be, you know, seen, run, popular for the next decades.
Yeah, and while we talk about people not holding press conferences, it's not about gotcha moments. It's about being able to talk about policy in detail, and the fact FIFA put no one up to discuss this. It should be a big moment for them to want to talk about how they're progressing the women's game in particular. And I think we're showing there are lots of interesting angles from it. You've got leagues I know aren't happy, particularly in Europe, that their season could be split. How's it going to work around that? A disjointed season, which then isn't good for retaining fan interest, both in stadiums and on broadcasts as well. If there's, you know, if there are these pauses for a club World Cup in the middle of the season, well, of course, no, and it's not all about Eurocentric football.
Yeah, hugely. And you know what? A moment like this week, so there's a week where all of football comes together in one place. And we were told before we actually arrived that there was going to be a lot of media moments to try and talk to people. I've seen messages to me and to others to say, yeah, we've got things lined up where you could talk to people. And I'll give you an example. You've just talked about women's football. There's people here from the commercial side of FIFA. There's Arsene Wenger here with these great plans, very interesting plans about the future of youth football and development around the world. Gianni Infantino threw away a line about the new video game, and there's people here from commercial. You know, we're here. It would be really interesting and important for everyone to talk to these guys. But I think we were limited to, you know, unless all these things were happening, we weren't invited or we didn't know about it, to going to a Legends tournament here and being behind a kind of mixed zone scenario and having former players come over to talk at various stages. Now, that's all well and good, but I don't know how it will help answer some of these other big kind of profound questions about the future of the game.
So you weren't able to sort of mix with all the delegates and guests around the event?
Well, we could, as usual, go to hotels and stuff. But
no,
the
but
idea...
at the Legends game?
No,
no.
So that's changed because in recent times, certainly I know in Qatar and other places, you can, you know, FIFA let us in. You're actually at the dinner as well, stand-up dinner, mixing with various FAs and people.
No, there was nothing like that. It's definitely feels, you know, if you look back at what Infantino is the last 18 months, he did say in Rwanda a year ago, why are you so mean to the media? I mean, he won't think he will hate things like, you know, he was criticised about his speech in Qatar where he said, today I'm gay, I'm a migrant worker, I'm a woman. And then the whole of the, you know, his friend Salt Bae, I think he was embarrassed about that and the criticism he got around Salt Bae going onto the pitch, the World Cup final. And then the selfies with Pelé and then, you know, a gaffe around the Rwanda War Memorial. So he probably thinks that he's got nothing to lose by snubbing the media.
There's some who will see a lot of our discussion as seemingly like a cheap shot at him, maybe, or, you know, questioning, making him too much of the centre, and the fact you're just sour, the fact you've gone all the way there and there isn't a press conference. But those points that you do bring up, they're all one sort of self-generated. And I would say what culminated in Salt Bae embarrassing FIFA on the pitch at the World Cup final in Qatar, I had raised well over a year before with him, both on and off public press conferences, his dealings with Salt Bae, promoting his products on social media. You know, we'd been spotting a flagging issue, so we weren't amiss in terms of spotting there was something slightly questionable about how Salt Bae was using that relationship.
No, these aren't cheap shots. I mean, for example, one of the, it's quite dry, but you know, you look at the statute changes. So the finance committee, when the reforms came in, it said at least half the members of the finance committee must be independent. And all of them must have a sort of financial, be qualified to deal with financial matters. That has just been completely removed from the statutes. Mm. And you want to be able to ask, why have you removed that? You know, that very important sort of, what was seen, that'd be like, you know, vitally important. The finance committee's got so much power and control. You needed to have independent overseers of that. And that's just gone now.
Finance, which of course has been a part of FIFA's problems in the past, right, if you think about it. And independence isn't popular in football, except the English Football Association, funny enough, has a board that is majority independent. So it can happen, it can work, and it kind of saves you from yourself sometimes if you have independence on these boards. Yet it's this desire for control, which seems to be, you know, the overarching aim at the moment. By the way, the statute changes, the discussion, what discussion, in terms of Congress, was just very short. They were agreed upon with just four dissenting votes. You know, FIFA has 211 members. So obviously what's good enough for the goose is good enough for the gander, is it, Martin?
Those statute changes, in part, they are about the committees, aren't they? Increasing more committees, which sounds very dull, but as we mentioned previously, about dishing out a load of roles. Although, I think FIFA are saying that they have expanded greatly in this Gianni Infantino era, so they need more committees to be able to oversee the various decisions that are made.
I don't know. It's Miguel Maduro, the former FIFA governance chief, said it's a form of institutionalized vote buying having all these committees. So I'm sure that's what they would say.
And it has to be pointed out, I have had the chance to interview Gianni Infantino briefly in the last year, once at the Women's World Cup, where he did address the criticism of him the previous day from a speech. And as he arrived at the IFAB meeting in Scotland a few months ago, although that was only brief, in the expectation he was going to do a press conference the next day, and then he didn't before I rejoined you all. And perhaps if you had had the chance to question, one of the things that I said, we were talking about, what would you ask? I said, well, one thing that probably get a lot of interest was, what does Gianni Infantino think about the Premier League and VAR? Because some moves this week to scrap VAR, well, just from one club, Wolves of getting it to a vote at the Premier League meetings, the biggest league in the world, even contemplating in some form rolling back the tech.
Yeah, Wolverhampton Wanderers feel hard done by themselves. They're probably not the only club, maybe Nottingham Forest. I think they do too. I would be surprised if it actually goes to a vote at the summer meeting next month, because I don't think the other clubs will even want to vote in it, because I just think will Wolves want to be embarrassed if they don't only get, one other club behind them? But they might do. But I spoke to Mark Bullingham, the Football Association chief executive, about it. He said the FA is very much in favour of keeping VAR. He thinks the semi-automated offside system coming in next season to the Premier League is going to make it much, much better, much quicker. So it's an interesting talking point, because we know Sweden voted against it, but Tarek, you want it scrapped, don't you?
Yeah, but only for this reason. I mean, the thing is, we were hoping that we'll get correct decisions and remove the controversy away. But in my decades of being alive and watching football, it doesn't seem like there's been a moment that has been more controversial than the era we're living in now with decision making in football, and that's after VAR. So if you remember, before there was no VAR, we would have decisions. Sometimes they won't be great, sometimes it'd be wrong, but it was in the moment, human error, and we could appreciate that, and the game moves on. Now what do we have? We have goals and that are suspended for a while, fans who can't cheer, interminable delays. If you were to ask anyone, has this made the viewing experience and the experience for coaches and players better? I'd say most people would say no. And if that's the case, it's not the end of the world not to have it.
Everyone would be calling for its reintroduction the moment we had some other huge controversy. in a World Cup final, playoff, something like that.
Undoubtedly.
And obviously quite an agenda packed by FIFA, but WADA get a mention each week at the moment, don't they? The World Anti-Doping Agency dealing with all the fallout from the Chinese swimmers case, and also issues with Tunisia as well.
Yeah, the Tunisian thing is fascinating in kind of how difficult some of this can be when you're dealing with nations. So the Tunisian Anti-Doping Agency has been suspended by WADA. And the impact of that, as we saw with Russia in the past, when you're suspended, your national teams, if depending on the severity of this, your logos and emblems and flags and anthems and things like that are paused, are sort of prohibited until you're conforming again. So there was a swimming championship in Tunisia after this. Local officials, following the rules, covered up the flag of Tunisia, and guess what happened? They got arrested and chucked into jail for disrespecting the national colours. WADA have called for these people from the Anti-Doping Association to be released, obviously. But my God, can you imagine?
No, I mean, yeah, you expect to go and see somebody urinating to a pot. You don't expect to be thrown into prison.
Absolutely.
Well, It's been great hearing from you in Bangkok. The first time FIFA have held their Congress in that part of the world, it is making these events more global, as they would say. Any highlight away from FIFA? Anything you've seen in Bangkok as first-time visitors?
We went to ate outside in a sort of street food place where Tariq had squid eggs, which I'd never even heard of before, in a broth that was so hot that he was unable to have more than about four mouthfuls, and then spent the rest of the night sort of sucking on a piece of mango to try and soothe his lips.
And like a famous royal, I thought I couldn't sweat, but that meal really got the better of me. For me, the highlight was quite a hairy tuk-tuk ride to get there, wasn't it, Martin? few bumpy streets to get around, but the Thais have been really good hosts, I would say. So cup cum cup to the people who welcomed us.
Great to hear some people welcoming, at least there for you in Bangkok. Well, if anyone's got any feedback, particularly on some of our points around media relations, press conferences, how they should be conducted, whether we have a right to ask questions, of course we would say we would do. You can message us anonymously even at Sport Unlocked on X, Facebook and Instagram. You can also email sportunlockedpod@gmail.com. Create an anonymous message, send it, just send your thoughts if you know you really have got something, and anyone's always welcome. But for now, thank you for listening. Goodbye.